Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to the Science of Success. Introducing your host, Matt Bodner.
Jamie, welcome to the Science of Success.
Thank you, Matt. Great to be with you, brother.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the show in this special edition that we're doing. I've done a few live interviews in the course of the history of the show, but it's been a while since I've done in-person live show for the Science of Success. So it's really good to have you here.
Thank you. It's fun. I like being, you know, there's a different energy when you're in person, right?
Absolutely. At some point, I want to download from you this whole setup and like how you, the logistics of getting it put together, because I really like the studio and the vibe. And
a lot of people smarter than me.
That's always a good strategy. Yeah. So Jamie, you and I have a bunch of connectivity, but we met each other literally sitting next to each other at a dinner.
I know. How crazy was that?
And the funny thing is we sat next to each other at this dinner the entire night. And I mean, we kind of exchanged pleasantries, but we didn't really speak that much. And then, you know, as we were finishing dessert, basically, we realized we had a mutual acquaintance that we knew really well. And then we started talking about psychology, right? And I had no idea that it really what you had done in that world. And, you know, I'm an amateur kind of dabbling in the space, but I find the topics to be super interesting. So, you know, you started talking about a couple things and I was like, yo, this guy's really smart. And I wanted to kind of dig into it. So the first thing you mentioned to me at dinner the other night was this concept that I hadn't heard of before that I thought was really cool, which was the distinction between agreements and expectations.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear your perspective on what is that and, you know, why is it important?
Expectations are what we believe about how other people will behave. And it's interesting because it's part of our vernacular, right? I've got these expectations. Or in the business world, I'll often hear, hey, be really clear about your expectations. And it sounds lovely, like, oh, that's good. If I was clear on my expectations, then that other person will really know how to do the right thing, which will essentially please me. Now, if you notice that for just a second, you realize pretty quickly this whole thing about expectations is one directional. Like, even if I'm clear about my expectations, what I think is clear suddenly turns out at some point along the way, not clear.
I've had that experience many, many times.
Right?
Yeah.
And so fundamentally, I just started going, I think there's something fundamentally wrong with living in expectations. There has to be another way of being. And so what I stumbled across was there is. I read a line by a Franciscan priest that captured it for me. He said, all expectations are premeditated resentments.
I really like that.
Isn't that a great line?
Yep.
And you have to, and every time I say it, you got to pause for a second, like, whoa, hold on, wait, what? And what it means is I'm already setting myself up to be resentful of the other person because no one will do it exactly the way I have it in my mind. So it doesn't serve them and it doesn't serve me. And eventually I'm just setting myself up to do work around. I will eventually have to do work around forgiveness because I'm going to be frustrated that they didn't do it the way I wanted them to.
That's my experience a lot of the time also.
Right? Yeah. And then in the workplace, you think about the person on the other end, you know, and I work with a lot of people in C-suites, you know, a lot of CEOs and so forth. And when I start with them, they usually come from this paradigm and they're usually frustrated about something. I mean, I was clear on my expectations. I'm like, oh, were you clear? And the motive then on whoever that other person is to get the project done or fulfill the expectations is usually driven by fear, two energies, fear. I'm afraid I'm not going to do it the way that guy wanted me to, or that lady wanted me to get it done, or that board or whatever. Fear. I'm driven by fear, or I'm driven just by pleasing. I hope I please you. I hope I please you. I hope. Well, neither of these are great energies for a long-term relationship, professionally or personally. And so how do we, if we remove expectations, which as soon as I sit with a client, this is the first session, this is what I'm inviting them to do. Hey, I want to invite you to remove all expectations from your life.
It's a tall order.
That seems daunting.
Yep.
And what we know is, and you know this because I've loved our conversations, is nothing exists in a vacuum. So you have to replace it with something. So my invitation is, hey, could you replace all expectations with agreements? And here's how this works. Instead of me, we'll use a business thing for a second. So, hey, we're working on this project. These are the 10 things I think need to be done on the project. Old paradigm. Do these 10 things, make sure they're done. I need them Friday by noon. These are my expectations. Am I clear? Yeah. And of course, rarely are they done exactly the same that way, right? Agreement's a little different. Takes a little bit more work on the front end. But my argument, especially for all my people who are always thinking through ROI and efficiency, is it's going to serve you way more on the back end. So I take them through. So and you're going to sit with someone, you're going to work on a project. Hey, I'm thinking about this project. Are these 10 items I really feel like need to be done to make this project successful? What do you think? Now, I've immediately changed the dynamic because I've invited the other person into participating with me, which means I've raised up. They kind of feel like in that moment, like, well, geez, I kind of feel like the equal. Wait, you're looking for my feedback?
Yeah, you're creating buy-in.
There it is. There's immediate emotional ownership simply by asking. And one of the biggest problems I deal with, this almost every CEO will tell me, geez, I'm just having trouble. My guys aren't collaborating. And I'm like, well, tell me about how well you're collaborating, right? Because if they're not, it's probably not being modeled. So now suddenly we have an opportunity for collaboration and you invite people to participate to your point exactly. Now you have emotional ownership. Now
I love that term, by the way.
Do you like that phrase? And then not only have emotional ownership, but you're also now getting creative input. Instead of it being one-sided, your idea about how the project should run. And so they go, yeah, hey, number one's good. Number three is good. Number four, hey, number five, I'm not sure I can do it. And then you go, well, wait, tell you what, if I could resource you, do you think you could get that done? Oh, yeah, okay, good. Well, see, okay, let's go back. Oh, six is good, seven. I think we need an add an 8, 9, and 10. Oh, really? Why? Well, because I'm thinking about this. Great point. Thank you. I wouldn't have thought of that. Beautiful. Okay, so would you say back to me what you heard us talk about? Now, I call that mirroring. So this is, I add this in, and you could do this in your relationship with your spouse, with your kid, with your friend, anybody, your business partner. Hey, would you say that back to me? Okay, so what I understand is the project's going to be, that was close. What I really meant on number nine was this. So say that back. Okay, good. So do we have an agreement? Yeah, sounds great. Totally different than these were my 10 expectations. The energy around the whole thing. And by the way, now I know I don't have to manage you. All I have to do is manage the agreement.
Tell me about that.
Well, now it's not personal. You're what an idiot. I can't be. Or when I'm talking to like the COO and like, are you kidding me? You know what she didn't and he didn't.
Yep.
And by the way, the other way, because how many times does somebody go home and you roll over to your wife and like, oh my gosh, the CEO, now he wants me to do this. And this is, his expectations are ridiculous. And I can't work this many hours. Yep. Right. Now, it's all an agreement, so the two of you are just managing the agreement. So let's just say the person who's involved in the project goes home and says, oh, honey, I'm, you know, I got to work through Saturday or whatever. Well, why do you have to work through Saturday? Well, we talked about this project and, you know, I agreed to. Well, now the other person's not the villain anymore. Cause she's like, well, you agree to it? Well, yeah, I mean, I agree to it.
Yep.
Okay.
It's not getting forced on you. You're collaborating and sort of buying into. I love. Yeah. You're taking emotional ownership of it.
There right? it is.
Which is a great term.
And most of us, funny thing about humans, most of us just don't like being told what to do.
Very true.
So when you invite me into being autonomous, and notice it's an invitation, even though, quote, I'm your boss, even though I'm your direct report, but when I invite you, it is a different energy than telling you. You have the all, it's just a totally different energetic experience. And again, and I think it's more efficient on the back end now because I'm just managing our agreement. Hey, it's Friday, it's 12 o'clock. We had an agreement that you were going to do XYZ? Yeah. Yeah, I don't have that ready. Okay, so we have a broken agreement. Yeah. Okay, so what are we going to do to repair that? Because if we have a broken agreement, we have a broken trust. Yeah. My bad. You know, I wasn't expecting this and that. And like, okay, so let's make a new agreement around that. And you think, but now the energy is not, I just want to please you or I'm afraid of you. And this is really big. This is really big. The energy is now, I want to be a person of integrity.
Mm, that's a really, I love that shift.
I want to feel integrated. Integrity
it's
to me is
almost like shame.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't want you to feel shame. I do want you to feel the responsibility that comes with being a person of your word. And to feel integrated, I have this internal pressure to follow through. And now the pressure is not, I've got to please you or I'm afraid of you. It's I want to be integrated and be a person of my word. And the whole dynamic of everything dramatically changes. I mean, you can shift an entire culture in a company by just removing expectations and replacing them with agreements.
That's so fascinating. So a number of questions about that, but how do you think about, you know, as somebody who manages a decent amount of people, like one of the things that comes to me is like, okay, if I have somebody who keeps breaking my agreement with them, how would you think about handling that?
So this would take us into our triangles. And I have to give you a little model for that. But I'll give you a quick answer and then we can go
and
there.
Then we'll go triangles.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But yes.
Because it flows right into that. But the quick answer would be remembering that you're the empowered chooser. So if you have someone who continues to break agreements, you get to ask yourself, do I want to continue to be in relationship with someone I can't trust? Or would I like to move on from this relationship?
So it gives you more clarity around underperforming or sort of, I don't know what the right term would be, negative relationships, challenging relationships.
You can even kind of take it away from that and just go someone who currently, for whatever reason, busy life, trauma, their own triggers, a lack of discipline, whatever the characteristic is that's presenting or deep issue in the employee, the bottom line is they're not being a person of integrity by keeping their agreements. So there's two options. That person's going to have to do some work to keep their agreements, or it's just time for them to move on.
That makes sense. So in the pre-show, you mentioned these infamous triangles. tell me about triangles and how do they factor into both agreements and expectations and also, you know, human performance as a whole or psychological well-being.
Yeah, it is one of the best behavioral models I've come across. You and I have talked about this before. There's so many great models out there, but I love this model. And the reason I love it, it's kind of the law of threes. I love it because there's simplicity and it's easy to remember. I first stumbled across this in my own therapeutic work. In 2016, I'd never dealt with anxiety before. I'd never had a panic attack in my whole life. And I had this breakdown of this confluence of not feeling integrated in my job at the time, feeling like I was being pulled two different ways and one way felt really wrong, but I felt like I didn't have a choice. And it was like a 5-day therapeutic retreat where they go into your story and you find out, hey, where are you stuck and all that. It was the first place I experienced this model. Developed by Stephen Carvin in the 1960s, comes out of transactional analysis. It's called the drama triangle. And a few people have done like TED Talks on it and stuff. What's interesting to me though is this talks about the negative ways of relating, but very few people have a positive version of it. So I'm going to give you both.
Okay.
So the drama triangle is all drama all the time. It's where the ego lives. There's three dominant characteristics. One, so picture a triangle upside down. At the very bottom, hell, is where you live as a victim.
Okay.
If you slide up the triangle along the right side of the triangle, you have the word perpetrator. And if you slide up the left side of the triangle, you have the word rescuer. So let's say just a word about the ego. So the ego is that primal part of us, fight, flight, or freeze. The ego walks around on the planet trying not to die. So thank you, ego. You're keeping me alive. And really, right? There's no shame. Like, thank you for keeping me alive. But the ego is all survival, which means if I stay in it, it's just an ongoing sense of suffering. And when I'm stuck in this loop with relationships, it's false intimacy. It's intense. You have intensity, but you don't have intimacy. And you can watch people live and die here. They just bounce from corner to corner of these triangles. A lot of people even get married. One is the rescuer and one is the victim. So for instance, one person might have an energy that goes, I'm really having trouble. You know, these bad things have happened to me and I just can't, you wouldn't believe this, that my dad and this happened, my coach and my team and my college did this. And
that's giving me anxiety just like hearing that.
And the other person has a need to be needed. So they go, oh, I can help you. Oh, I got you. I'll take care of you. And I'll rescue you. And hey, honey, come on. Like, I'm going to lead the way. I'll be the, like, right. And so it's funny how often relationships form in that. And it works for a little while until it doesn't. And the place it typically starts not working is when the victim's like, oh my gosh, stop trying to control everything about my life. And they slide up to the perpetrator. And when you're in the perpetrating corner, you're basically going, I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. Mm. I feel vulnerable and I feel exposed. I don't know what to do with it. So I might be sarcastic. I might use silence, withdraw. Mm. I might get loud and big and aggressive. But right now, something in my world feels exposed. Remember, it's my ego. Oh my gosh, I'm threatened. My threat analysis is up and I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. And you'll see the people who, especially big aggressive personalities, they'll hurt you, and then they'll feel really bad about it afterwards and like come back around like, oh, so, you know, I'm sorry. Those people who kind of have that loop,
yep,
of they'll hurt you, then they'll apologize, hurt you, then they, again, there's compassion here. There's no judgment. It's just the ego trying to keep itself alive. And it's a strategy the ego employs. The rescuer victim dances. So let's say the victim goes, stop controlling me. The rescuer starts getting fed up and goes, oh my gosh, dear God, at some point you're going to have to take responsibility for your life, right? And yep, here comes the argument. And then he might, now he's the perpetrator, she's the perpetrator. Mm. And no one is ever in the same corner. You're always pushing people around, which is a pretty good picture of it. You're literally pushing people around, right? So it's just suffering. And you can live that way. And suffering is its own teacher. So again, there's no, when I sit with a client, like, you can live this way. I'm not forcing you to make any decisions you don't want to make, right? It works. It's just you suffer a lot. If you like to not suffer, there's another way to live. And so we have what we call, so we usually call that drama triangle the red triangle, because it's kind of the red flushed face of, you know, intensity. We call it the green triangle. And so if you put on top of it, almost like in the shape of a diamond, stick that green triangle right side up above the red triangle, the very top, heaven, would be ownership. And if you slide down the left side, you go to boundaries. And if you slide down the right side, you get to negotiation. Let's start with boundaries. Boundaries are where I go, hey, that doesn't work for me. Let's say you're on the job and you go, I'm not going to lie about that. You know, whatever the thing is, I'm not going to lie. And let's say your direct report's like, well, you're going to have to lie on that. And now you could go, oh my gosh, let's say you're a victim. You leave, you started right there, nice and green, right? No, I'm not going to do that. And then you go home and you go, oh my gosh, honey, my direct reports tell me I got to lie on this thing. And I can't be, he's such a jerk and he's forced me to do this. Now I got to go do something I don't want to do. And you're a victim. And therapists say this, it's a great line. They say the moment something happens to you that violates your agency, you're abused, you know, or betrayed, the moment you're a victim, it matters. You're a victim. But the next moment, you're not. Otherwise, you're going to stay down there. Your identity is going to be as a victim. So what I say to that person is like, I can't believe you still are an empowered chooser. So they'll say back to me, well, what am I going to quit?
It's a choice.
That's an option. So you get to choose, I will forego this, what was previously a boundary, and do this thing my direct reports asking me to do. You can do that, but you're not a victim anymore. your choosing. Or you can go to a, you can go to a senior manager. Or you, you know.
Yep.
But there's a world of possibilities perhaps you haven't explored. But let's just remember you're the chooser. So you're not making the choice as a victim anymore. Own your own decision.
I like that.
Get clear on your boundaries that you know this is kind of my non-negotiable. I slide over there. I own what I want. Ownership is heaven to me where I own what I want. I own it. And one of the first exercises I do with clients is I ask them what they want. And it, you'll be surprised how difficult this can be.
I know when you asked me what I wanted, it was certainly an interesting conversation.
We've talked about this, right? Because it's actually vulnerable to own what I want. And sometimes we don't really know what we want. It takes a little work. That's why, to me, it's the most powerful position. Because when I actually own it, I stop giving my power to other people. It's very empowering to own my own want. Now, other humans have their own wants too, right? So we all have preferences. So I slide over to negotiation and now I, hey, here's what I want. What do you want? Let's negotiate that. I got some boundaries, by the way. This is kind of a non-negotiable for me. But these are my preferences, you know, and what are yours? And let's negotiate. We do this in a marriage. We do this. I think we even do this with our kids, even though we're, quote, the authority. Choice theory, which I know one of your guests, Brene Brown, has talked about before, allows, I'm presenting my children even with choices. I'm helping them learn how to negotiate their little world, right?
They negotiate with me quite a bit.
And the way your mind is, like, you're probably good at it, right?
Yeah.
But you're training them, like, negotiate. And I had one of my kids especially was really good at it too. I'm like, you know, I got to tell you, I really honor the fact that you're really good at this. Like...
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give. But what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are, too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking about changing my position. Like, yes, you can have ice cream because you've lobbied really well. Right. So, but this is now the healthy way of relating. And up here in the green, everybody retains their autonomy. Everyone has the ability to choose. I honor your choice. You honor mine. We show up with one another and we create agreements.
I want to dig into a piece of that, especially kind of the boundary element. How do you think about, let's say you view yourself as an empowered chooser, you know, you've set some boundaries, but you have somebody in your life who has like a, whether it's an authority figure or a parent or like a boss or something that equivalent that either doesn't honor your boundaries or, you know, is just very constantly seems to be knocking you back down into the red triangle or the, you know, victimhood, lack of agency, et cetera. How do you think about navigating that or dealing with that?
It's a great question.
And they don't want to do the work.
Yeah, that's good. It's a great question. Everybody runs into it. So it's really good. First of all, nobody knocks you down into the red triangle.
Ooh, okay. You knock yourself down.
There you go. Because if you did, then now you have no power, right? I would be the victim. They knocked me into the red triangle. Nope. I chose to be a victim. Right. I chose. Now, again, outside of somebody violates you or whatever, you could argue that's the only moment that somebody did a thing to you and you identify in that brief moment as the victim. But most of the time it's I'm choosing to go down. I'm sliding down there. I feel threatened and I'm perpetrating, or I want to stay in this victim place because it soothes me. When we stay in the victim energy, it's really just a way of soothing. I want to blame someone else.
So I don't have to take ownership.
I don't want to take ownership.
Yep.
It's my way of avoiding taking responsibility. And the rescuing, when I'm down in the rescuer, it's really my codependency. Definition of codependency is if you're not okay, I'm not okay. So most rescuers are really uncomfortable with tension. It's like, oh, I got to fix this. So I'll fix you. And they're really good enablers. Well, what's the difference? You know, but isn't it good to serve people? Yep. Serve them, but don't be their savior. Care for them, but don't be the messiah. Right? It's when we shift into the energy of I'm now the rescuer. I'm the savior. I'm the one who's fixing it. Let me tell you, if you want to be the king, that's cool, but it's only a matter of time before you get crucified.
That's a good way to put it. I like that.
Right? I mean, yeah. This is just how it works. So you understand. So serve them, but don't enable them. And that's a fine line. Sometimes the behavior is the exact same behavior. And the difference is the energy in which I'm showing up.
The intention.
Yep. And that's where I get to take ownership. What's my intention here right now? And I've lived a lot of life in the rescuer. I've spent a lot of time there.
A space that I'm like not, I'm much more of a perpetrator.
It's good. So you're aware like, and I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. Which is your ego defense mechanism. Yep. My ego defense mechanism for years was, I hope you'll like me. So I'll just come in and fix this. I'll rescue it. Oh, yeah. It was probably my fault. Sorry. And I thought I was, quote, taking responsibility, but a lot of times I didn't even believe I was wrong, but I was saying I'm sorry because I want peace, right? And so I deviated from your question, but just a little more flavor in how we show up in that behavioral dynamic. Yep. If you have somebody who they're not interested in living in the green, right? And they just keep crossing your boundary or they just keep coming with that drama energy. You keep evaluating what is the boundary, right? So if it gets crossed, I have to go, well, something then about that boundary was ineffective. So the extreme versions of this are, well, I'll give you a less extreme version first. Here's an example of two people are in a car. Let's take a husband and wife. And one person's a little more calm and the other person can be more aggressive. Let's say they go to perpetrator really fast. And the person starts screaming, yelling. And you're like, well, one of my boundaries is it's not okay to scream and yell, right? So let's say you say that. Hey, this is not okay for you to scream and yell at me, right? And so what we might try to do is go, stop yelling, stop screaming. It's never effective though, yep. Right? Because I've now climbed onto their side of the street and I'm attempting to manage their behavior, which I can't control the other human.
Yep.
So instead of saying, stop yelling, stop screaming, stop talking to me like that, because it doesn't work. You know, maybe, but most of the time when we're in our limbic, it takes about 20 minutes for us to get back online. We're in that like primal, because again, remember the person's in fight, flight, or freeze. you might, the boundary would be, hey, if you continue speaking to me in that way, I'm going to remove myself from the conversation.
Yep.
We can talk about this again in the morning over breakfast, or we can come back 20 minutes from now, but this doesn't work for me because I now can remove myself. Like, that's an actual boundary. Now, if you run that all the way to the nth degree, it's the same thing in relationships. Someone says, well, I don't want to get divorced, but I'm experiencing abuse. And I'd go, I get that. So you have to keep asking yourself, let's say this person is violating this boundary for you. Is it a boundary for you or is it a preference?
Would you say the difference between a boundary and a preference is whether you're willing to, I guess, walk away or draw a bright line over
Yes.
it?
Yeah. If it's a preference, I move to negotiation. And that person might just be a better negotiator. And so I never go to the restaurants I want to go to. Right? But I'm not going to, but it's not a boundary. I'm not leaving the marriage for it. They're super opinionated and they rarely come my way. And I wish they would, but I'm not able to negotiate on my behalf. But, you know, a boundary might be like, it's not okay to hit me. And you keep hitting me. And I'm still the empowered chooser. Now, I could say, I'm going to stay in this relationship and let you hit me because I want my kids to have a home where mom and dad are living in the same home. So that's your choice. Or you could say, hey, I'm leaving, or I'm getting a separation, or we're getting a therapist, or, you know, or I'm calling a certain, you know, I'm calling a helpline. Like, I'm looking for other possibilities that go, it's not okay to hit me. We're going to invite a third party and we're going to talk to your brother. It's your boundary. But you are still the empowered chooser. You get to choose whether or not, and, you know, and then you have extreme situations where someone goes, yeah, but if what if I leave and they're violent and they come after me? And I go, absolutely. So you get to make the choice. You're running a risk reward here. You can stay there or you can get help.
It's a tough choice.
And isn't it? But when you get to these extreme situations, to remember, I'm still the chooser though. Because if I'm not, by the way, think about the alternative.
Yeah, the alternative is worse. Right?
The alternative is I'm just the endless victim of your abuse, hoping someday that you might change.
One of my favorite quotes is, hope is not a strategy.
That's so good. Gosh, so good. And that's kind of in the red triangle. That's, as a victim especially, it's the only thing you got.
I think that's a really, really important distinction, which is like, we're talking about some pretty heavy stuff here, right? I mean, being trapped in an abusive marriage and, you know, thinking about navigating some of these triangles or psychology dynamics that play into this. But you highlighted something that's really critical to understand, which is the distinction that making that choice between staying with a spouse who's abusing you and leaving and upturning your entire life and, you know, casting it all aside and creating a bunch of pain and headaches and, you know, whatever else, is a very challenging choice, but it's still being able to make that decision is still better than being a victim.
That's it. That's
it. That's a really, really important thing to understand.
That's it. And if I stay in the green, I also get to ask myself some other questions. Okay, let's say I have someone who's, they go to perpetrator quickly. And by the way, and let's start with some compassion. Hey, that human being who's abusive is abusive for a reason. They were abused. They have undealt with trauma, right? Like, there's something going.
Hurt people.
Yeah, hurting people hurt people. That's right. Something's going on in them. So in ownership, I might ask myself, hey, what are the triggers that I hit? Hey, when I cut him off or cut her off and walk away and create an abandonment feeling, am I actually hitting a trigger? And that's actually not kind. So mine might not be physically abusive, but my just cutting that person off is another form, quote, of abuse in that, or you could at least say, if you don't put it in the abuse category, it's really unkind and it's hurtful. And it's not helpful, and it's actually adding fuel to the fire of their undealt with trauma, unhealed, right? So I can also take some ownership and go, hey, if I've got a person who is really hurting and is like their trigger is so fast, what are some things I might be able to do to participate in their healing, right? So I get part of ownership just creates other possibilities. So I get to ask myself, when you're the victim, you only see through one lens. That the economy, the president, the husband, the boss, they're doing a thing to me. That's it. When I go up into the green, I create a world of possibilities as an empowered chooser that goes, this person has this proclivity. What am I going to do while I'm engaged?
I really like that. Yeah. And I think, again, it bears underscoring, like, just because the choices might be extremely challenging or difficult to navigate or very tough, painful choices to make, it's still better to operate from a place of agency than it is to operate from a place of hopelessness or victimhood.
Yeah.
Where nothing will change and you'll continue to suffer or deal
you
with
are
those.
At the power of the other person.
Yep.
So the green is an invitation. Take your power back. And you're the one of the people who's talked to me about, hey, discomfort is actually one of the fundamental aspects that causes us to grow as a human being.
I believe that.
Right? And I agree with you. I totally agree with you. So the thing that's most uncomfortable for me right now might be my greatest teacher. And so I need a pattern disruptor. So when I'm with people in these scenarios, a lot of times I'll just go, here's a starting place. Let's just look for a pattern disrupt. And I had a person say to me one time, hey, what if before that person gets amped, it's your mom, it's a spouse, it's whatever, but you can see something's coming in them. Something is unsoothed. They're not regulated.
Mm-hmm.
Walk right up to them and give them a hug.
That's crazy.
And before they hit that spot,
yeah,
and it's crazy how often like, and everything de-escalates and you go, hey, I can tell something's really messing with you. It sounds like you're hurting. You give them a hug and bam, and it never went there. Because they need, you're participating in their healing in that moment, right? And that's really hard to do sometimes when you, especially if there's been a pattern or whatever else. But that's just a picture of grace. You know, my red triangle way of being would be like, well, you don't deserve this because I know what you've done in the past, or or I can tell you're really angry right now and it's undeserved. And the green triangle is like deserved, undeserved, fair. Those are not, I'm not working from mentality.
Doesn't matter.
I'm an empowered chooser. Yep. What do I want to do right now? And perhaps me just walking up and loving you might diffuse the situation.
I really like that. The framework that whether something is justified or deserved or not is irrelevant if you're trying to solve it in a lot of cases.
That's it.
And I see people so frequently get caught up in that. It's like, hey, well, that it shouldn't be that way.
Yes.
Like, okay, doesn't matter. We still need to solve it. And figuring out why it should or shouldn't be that way doesn't solve it.
That's it. That's it. It was really well said, Matt. And shouldn't, it misses the most important aspect of whatever the problem is. And that's that whether it should be or shouldn't be, to your point, it is.
Exactly.
So you're shifting the focus from your current experience with reality.
Mm. We talked in the pre-show or in our other conversation around Josh Waitzkin has this concept in Art of Learning where he talks about being frozen in what was.
Oh, gosh.
Right. And he tells a story about this lady crossing the street, getting hit by a bus because she was like not paying attention. She was like frozen in something else that was happening. And if we get frozen in the past, we can't engage with what's actually happening right now.
That's it. That's
and
it.
Should can easily trap you there.
Yep.
In that place.
Yep. Because we talked about this. Should is always someone else's voice.
Yep.
And should is interfering with your intuition. This is what is. And so get honest with what is right here, right now. And be attentive to it.
What do you think stops people from getting honest with what is happening right now?
The two dominant energies are fear and shame. Fear is, I don't like this, but I'm comfortable with it. And I don't want to do what's uncomfortable. It's kind of the quintessential, I'm in a cage and the door's unlocked, but I'm staying in the cage because at least I'm comfortable.
I know,
here.
Yeah. I know, right? The cage.
Yeah. Okay. And there's an old experiment there where they put a lion or a cheetah.
Staking the elephant.
Yeah. Staking the elephant. Same thing, right?
Yep.
And you just get conditioned to say, well, I don't like this, but it's so much of my normal. I'm just going to stay here. And by the way, I would say to someone, if they're like, well, I know that's kind of me. There's no shame. Your ego is looking for comfort, control, and approval. That's where the ego lives. Those are three dominant energies of the ego. Comfort, control, which is perceived because I'm never in control.
Of course.
Right? But I think I'm
in control.
I think I'm in control. And then approval. And I'm exporting my authority.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm not in the green. I'm down in the red, hoping someone out there will say I'm okay.
Mm. Okay.
I heard two podcasts recently, and Russell Brand and John Mayer, and they were on different podcasts. It was just randomly the same week I was listening, and they were asked a very similar question, what would you go back and tell your younger self? And they both responded with a similar answer. I was like, oh, this is wild. And the answer was something like, I'd go back and tell my younger self, hey, you're okay. because when we're young, we're so looking for some outside validation. You know, when you're a teenager, you want to connect with a tribe. You're looking for some, you know, dance or football or theater or debate. Like, right? I'm in a tribe, right? Yeah. So at least, okay. And it's natural. It's part of your developmental way of growing up. But becoming an adult, David Rico, and if you're reading his stuff, he's awesome.
I haven't.
How to be an adult. But becoming an adult is then going, I don't need exterior validation anymore. I am okay. It's that quintessential I am statement. No, I am. Just I am. I'm present. I am an aspect of the divine. I'm here. And I'm good. Just right here. This is me. And I don't have to have some exterior authority figure, religious system, family system, or whatever, tell me I'm okay. And so, but that's a lot of our quest. The ego is just looking for someone else to say, you're okay. And a lot of us are making decisions, thinking about sometimes not even a real person. It's a straw man that we have in our head of what, yeah, but if I do that, if I go online, and I do, if I do a social media thing, what will they think of me? Right, right. And one of my clients is in American Idol right now, and she's in the thick of it. And we did a coaching call, and it's like all the stuff is up. And, you know, like, do I even stay with this? Do I quit? I mean, this is right at the point where America votes you in or out. And it's all the approval stuff. And she's awesome. And she's super coachable. And she's a sweetheart. And I said, look, you're struggling with approval and you signed up for American Idol. I mean, like,
yeah.
I'm saying, like, this is beautiful. Something, some subconscious thing in you was like, well, what would be like the hardest thing to, let's have all of the world choose.
Yeah.
Give
approve
their
me
opinion.
Or not. Yeah.
I mean, approve of me or not. Totally.
Yeah.
I said, so hard. Right. So I'm like, this is beautiful. Like, you want to talk about exposure therapy. You have thrown yourself in.
Yeah.
So we did a little thing on, do you want to be an adult or you want to be a kid? And so I just said, how about this? So her little hook was put away childish things. She has to swallow. I use this with my clients a lot of swallows, a good pattern disrupt. Swallow, and right before you take the stage, you go, I'm an adult. I'm an empowered adult, and I'm not a child. And so take that swallow, remember who you are, and step up and grip it and rip it. Like, I mean, just step into that with that confidence of being an adult and go up the-
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
That mic and just sing. And we'll see how it goes. But I mean, it's that. But that's all of us. And that was the thing I reminded her of. Like, everybody else on that stage is dealing with the same insecurities.
100%.
Right? It's all of us. That's our ego just trying to stay alive. So I'm reminding my clients all the time, if anybody's listening to this and they go, oh gosh, I'm stuck, or I know I've been a victim, or I know I've been a perpetrator, I just want to remind them, there's no shame. So Brene Brown, she does this better than anybody, right?
Yep.
Shame goes after identity. It says you're a loser, you're an idiot, you're no good. Guilt, we'll take guilt. We don't mind guilt. Guilt says, ooh, yuck, I don't like that behavior. That's not really reflective of who I am. I want to change it. It's kind of like a top level energy, guilt. Like, ooh, yeah. So I shift, I take a new action, and I can kind of let go of guilt, right? Confession leads to salvation, right? I let go of it. Shame buries us. I mean, it rubs our noses in it. It's drowning, right? Because it's saying you're a bad person. You're not worth anything. Usually hooks us to some lie that we took, some wound in our childhood, some lie that got wedged in. It's usually hooked there. I do a process with my clients using a kind of a modified genogram where we go back into their story, and you can find usually somewhere a lie got caught, and shame comes up and it tells you, I'm not good enough. I'm not perfect. I'm not worth it. I'm not performing the way I should, whatever the thing is. And so I'm just reminding them all the time, no shame. Do you have an ego? Just honor your ego. It's keeping you alive. If you'd like to not suffer, well, let's go live in the green.
I want to unpack shame because I think it's a fascinating topic. But before we do, you hit on this concept earlier too, this idea of like, I'll paraphrase how you said it, but you basically said, I'm not going to tell you that you should do this, but if you want to reduce your suffering, here's how. And I just really like that framing of like, it's more of an invitation or, you know, an option versus a, hey, you need to do these five things if you want to reduce, you know, reduce your suffering. It's like, hey, you can keep doing that thing.
Yes.
You know, and maybe that's your journey, right? Yes. Like maybe that's hearkening back to Alan Watts we were talking about yes. before, like, you know, maybe that's the trip that you're on is like just massive suffering, right? And but it's if you don't want to experience that, like there are modalities and things you can do that are different than that.
That's it, right? And the reason is, let's go back to the triangles, because I believe you're an empowered chooser. If I tell you, I let's say, and I, this would be tempting as a coach sometimes. Oh my gosh, dear God, we've talked about this three times, like, right? Like,
yep.
And I get a little intense, like, oh my gosh, are you freaking kidding me? Stop doing the thing, right? Now, by the way, I might employ that every now and then as kind of a pattern disrupt to jolt them out of an ego place that where they're stuck. But generally speaking, what I'm doing is I have to check. If I'm doing that, it is absolutely just a mechanism for me as a tool right there in the moment. What I have to check in with, because if I have a pattern of doing it, I'm probably just a rescuer.
Mm.
You're suffering. I don't like that you're suffering. I want you to stop suffering. So I'm going to keep telling you to change. And by the way, a lot of times I'm telling you to change because I'm telling you, I've stopped inviting you. I'm telling you, and I'm usually telling you to change based on how I think you should be. Now, that's my Enneagram type. That's my Myers-Briggs yep. type. I grew up in the North or the South. I mean, it's my cultural bias. It's whether I lived in the West or the East. It could be a religious bias. Think about it. The moment I stop inviting and I move to telling, I stuck you in my paradigm for living, of which no one fits exactly someone else's paradigm for living.
Very true.
So maybe stop telling people how to live and invite them into opportunity.
I love that frame. All right. I want to come back to shame for a minute. So tell me more about how people interact with shame. And if shame is kind of a dominant force that drives you, how do you think about opportunities to interact with it in a more healthy way?
Yeah. Helpful and healthy. I think that shame and fear, and I suppose probably when they're knotted together, that it might be the darkest energy that's on the planet. It is when you are in shame, you've completely forgotten who you are. And for me, who you are is you're an aspect of the divine. So you're a child of God. There's this old 70s, I don't know if it's like 1970s, there's old movie called, I don't even remember the name of it. Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, something like this.
Okay.
It's the story of Francis of Assisi. It looks like an independent film made in 1970. That's the vibe.
Okay.
So it's a little cheesy, you know, but somebody, I had two or three people had told me to watch it. I'm like, okay.
Interesting.
So I'm watching it and it's a little cheesy. I'm like, okay, story of St. Francis. All right. Well, lo and behold, right toward the end of the film, Francis is a young man who grows up with all this wealth, and it messes with him. And so eventually he sheds all his wealth, and he's a vow of poverty, and he's going to live with the poor and the lepers and the whole thing. He has a little church, but then religious people burn his little church down, and he has this like incredible, beautiful naivete. St. Francis is known for like communicating with the animals and the birds, and like there's just this sweetness about who he is, right? And so in the story, he says he's going to go to Rome to talk to the Pope because he just doesn't understand why certain things are the way they are. And everybody's like, you think you're going to get an audience with the Pope? So sure enough, he goes to Rome. And this is apparently a true story. So this is kind of the story of St. Francis. So he goes to the Pope. I can't remember the Pope's name right now, but he goes to the Pope. Well, lo and behold, I'm watching this movie and the Pope is Alec Guinness. So this cheesy little film, and here comes awesome. Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I'm like, oh, suddenly the film got better immediately. So there's interaction, and everybody in Rome, he's I don't know if it's St. Paul's or St. Peter's Cathedral, I don't know, but he's going to see the Pope. And everybody is, what are you doing here? There's all this massive judgment, and nobody thinks he's going to get it. But somehow the Pope takes an audience with him. And he has this interaction with the Pope, and he's like, what is the deal with all this wealth and all this stuff? And what are you people? I mean, God said there's, you know, birds of the air don't have a place for their head. Like, why don't we just live in simplicity? He's just asking these difficult questions.
Yep.
And I think everybody's expecting the Pope to throw him out, and the Pope gets up off the throne or seat, whatever, his big chair, and he comes down the stairs, St. Francis level, and then he either kisses his hand or his feet, and like everybody's in shock. And I'm telling you this long story for a reason, because this quote is worth it. He looks at him and he says, you know, we have spent so much time talking about original sin that we forgot about original affection. We forgot about original blessing. that you were good before you were bad. And it's like this moment of, because there are some cultures that want to start with, you're a sinner, you're bad, you're wrong. You know, your humanity is bad unto itself. Your flesh is bad. And if you start with a frame that's you're bad, then you're always living in this place of, well, I guess I'm not worthy enough. And there was this lovely moment, I think, to just go, wait, hold on a second. If you're an aspect of the divine, you're this light, you know, this energetic thing on the planet, then there's something beautiful about who you are. So how about start with the good? And I don't, again, my frame is there's no judgment whatsoever. And it's funny, even Jesus' teachings, there is no condemnation, right? Jesus repeatedly trying to remind people that, by the way, there is no condemnation anymore. Love actually rules the day. So if you can start with, I'm good. Now I have an ego that's going to cause me to act out, and I could kill someone. There could be an act of violence. Like, there are consequences that come with acting out in my ego. I could lose a relationship that matters to me. It's not because I'm a bad person. It's because my ego is trying to stay alive. And that ego is acting out. And I'm taking the journey of learning how to rein that ego in and live into my higher self. Live into that divine in me, align with that higher part of me. So that's the work I do with people. And shame just wants to tell you you're bad, you're worthless, you're whatever. And I think it's why it's the darkest energy. I had asked you between these three things, I asked you this when you were a guest on my podcast, who am I, why am I here, and what do I want? I asked you, of those three, what seemed most fundamental to you? And you said to me, I think probably identity.
Yep.
I don't know who I am, right? You said, I think the other flows from that. And it would be the same. If my identity is shameful and bad, I'm going to have trouble with a sense of purpose, and I'm going to have trouble with getting clear about what I want because I'm a horrible person. Shame wants to bury you, crush you. Stephen Pressfield in his book, The War of Art, says resistance is not out to maim you or wound you. Resistance is out to crush your soul. And every time you want to bring a creative act into being, that resistance is coming your way. And it usually is in the form of fear or shame. Perfect love casts out fear. If you can step into the fact that, hey, you are loved, let's just start with, for some reason you exist. Maybe just start with, if you're a philosophical type, just start with, for some reason you're on the planet. Just start there, which tells me you have some kind of value. You're here. Work from there. You have great value. You're not just lovable, but you're likable. And now, go take an action, go take a step. Even if you're not sure what it is, as you and I have talked about this, even if you're not sure what it is, act in faith, take a step, and you will discover who you are as you go. There's another thing you said to me, I'm referencing a bunch from when we were together, but you said, I don't know, will I ever really know who I totally am? Will I ever really know what my purpose is? Maybe that's a lifetime of discovery. I'm kind of winnowing it down. And I love that. So there's no shame. Take that step into the darkness that you don't know what it is, and you'll discover who you are as you go. That's called faith. It's the courage in the midst of fear. And remember that while you have this struggle, remember there's a goodness in you.
That's really powerful. And I feel like we could talk for hours and hours about this stuff, but we're running out of time, sadly. So for somebody who wants to take some of the themes and ideas, could be anything we talked about today, and put that into practice in some form or fashion in their life, what would be an action step or a piece of homework you would give them to implement something we've talked about?
Yeah, I've never said this on a podcast before, but maybe it's on my mic because I just did with a client recently. All of humanity, like all of our problems boil down to one thing. Every single problem you have with any relationship with anybody on the planet comes down to one thing. Resentment. Somebody did not live up to your expectations, or they broke agreements. So how do I release, if I'm an empowered chooser, I don't actually have to hold on to that energy. So I just recently, a couple different clients, but this is a great exercise. Sit down and list your resentments.
I like that.
Remember, it's just energy, right? Picture it like strands of energy. I have this trapped energy in me. Write down every resentment you can think of.
I feel like I'm going to have a long list.
It could, and by the way, keep in mind, it's not doing anything to the other person, right? Like, they're probably sleeping fine at night. They might not even remember the thing. Didn't even know it impacted you that way. Like, we have no idea, right? because you can't control the other human being, right? But I can control me, and resentment's a dark energy that gets stuck in me. So let's release that energy by listing them off. So Kinlan's law, 85% of the problem solved the moment you write it down.
Ooh, I love that. I've never heard it, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
Big fan of journaling.
Okay. Yeah. So the moment you write it down, you're already going to find an energetic shift just because you wrote it down.
I love that.
Write it down and notice if the moment you wrote it down, it actually didn't leave you. So when you write it down, you might be like, oh yeah, no, oh, I don't want to hold on to that. I'm good. And it might just like kind of like a, like wind blowing a sheet of paper. Like it might be like, like a wisp, like, oh, okay, that's gone. Now other ones you might be like, no, that's definitely right there. And I got to do some work. What's my work? So here's your work. Out loud. Now we're doing some neuropathway here. Well, we're going to use my speech and I'm going to use my auditory and I'm also engaging my writing. So I'm going to accelerate my shifting and my changing. Out loud, I'm going to say to whatever that person is, the president, my father, my coach, my teacher, the schoolmate, whatever person I have resentment with, so-and-so, I forgive you. I release you and I release me.
Ooh, I like that last part.
And my hope is that you will live into the light of who you are. And I send you light and love. And then I repeat it. And I say it again. And I say it again. And I say it again. And I say it again until that resentment is gone. I've had clients who are like, it took me a day. I've had clients say it took me a week. And you just, every morning you get up. And keep in mind, I'm letting this go from me. It's just stuck energy. And when you get through that list and there are no more resentments, now the next day happens and you might, you know, like right there. So, but you start to clear that out. You will feel like you can fly. It's wild.
I love it. That's going on my to-do list for sure. Okay. I got to listen back to the recording and get the phrasing of that, but I love it. Well, Jamie, this has been an incredible conversation. For folks who want to find you and your work online, what's the best place for them to do that?
Probably the easiest, just our website, jamiegeorge.com, or social media, it's Jamie George Coach. TikTok's the place I do a lot of actual coaching on there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we do TikTok lives and that sort of thing. So yeah, that'd be a great place to come hang out with us.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on the show for this fascinating conversation. And we may have to do it again. We got so much stuff to cover.
I love it.
We just scraped the very beginning of the surface.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Matt. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to The Science of Success. We created this show to help you, our listeners, master evidence-based growth. I love hearing from listeners. If you want to reach out, share your story, or just say hi, shoot me an email. My email is matt@successpodcast.com. That's M-A-T-T at successpodcast.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I read and respond to every single listener email. I'm going to give you three reasons why you should sign up for our email list today by going to successpodcast.com, signing up right on the homepage. There's some incredible stuff that's only available to those on the email list, so be sure to sign up, including an exclusive curated weekly email from us called Mindset Monday, which is short, simple, filled with articles, stories, things that we found interesting and fascinating in the world of evidence-based growth in the last week. Next, you're getting an exclusive chance to shape the show, including voting on guests, submitting your own personal questions that we'll ask guests on air, and much more. Lastly, you're going to get a free guide we created based on listener demand, our most popular guide, which is called How to Organize and Remember Everything. You can get it completely for free, along with another surprise bonus guide, by signing up and joining the email list today. Again, you can do that at successpodcast.com, sign up right at the homepage, or if you're on the go, just text the word SMARTER, S-M-A-R-T-E-R, to the number 44222. Remember, the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral to a friend, either live or online. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us an awesome review and subscribe on iTunes, because that helps boost the algorithm, that helps us move up the iTunes rankings, and helps more people discover the science of success. Don't forget, if you want to get all the incredible information we talk about in the show, links, transcripts, everything we discuss, and much more, be sure to check out our show notes. You can get those at successpodcast.com. Just hit the show notes button right at the top. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Science of Success.